listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have Frank Holmes with me once again. I think Frank is very well known to most of you, heading up the U.S. Global Investors Organization. He's been doing that for quite a while now, since 1989, I believe, is what I'm seeing here on the script. And, of course, he's very well known for host of different mutual funds going back in those days, but he's also recently picked up some and created some very interesting ETFs, and now just a new one that we want to talk to him about today. It's the U.S. Global Sea and Sky ETF, trades under the symbol SEA, and I'm seeing it trading here now at about $20.85. Frank, thanks for joining us again.
It's great to be with you, Jay.
It's good to have you, and I think it's also good that we should tell our listeners it's usfunds.com where people should go. You should go there, folks. Take advantage of all the good stuff that's there, and including you can sign up for Frank's weekly missives that he sends out. Very informative, keeping up with the market and some key industries. Frank has always been an opportunistic investor. He sees opportunities where a lot of other people don't. And that's why I'm really happy to have him here today to talk about the U.S. Global Sea and Sky ETF that's just started trading in January 20th, I believe, of this year. Frank, I see that the stock, you know, is trading. It's up, I guess, up about 2% or so this morning and now. How many shares are there in this ETF?
Well, it will grow as more money comes into it, Jay.
Yeah, okay.
And I think... what's important for investors is that it is a way to play the global supply disruptions that are taking place. Mm-hmm. And there's many factors that were driving these supply restrictions and the huge price inflation. I mean, we're talking about tenfold increases. So what we saw in our research is very, very similar to what took place with jets. What I had noticed back in 2014 was that the airlines industry, because I have U.S. global investors and I'm flying to Africa and Latin America and Asia for all these resource funds and gold, and I noticed that that my options to fly internationally had declined by 30%, and the price of my tickets had doubled. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, someone's making money, uh-huh. and I want to get into the ETF business. So there was no airline ETF. And upon the research, finding out it's like 9% indirectly of the GDP in America. So it's a very significant contributor to the economy. And so that led to a quant approach to creating JETS. Mm-hmm. And JETS was a success out of the box. It quickly went to $40 million, which is your break-even level. Mm-hmm. And then it ran up to about 100 and some odd million. And with COVID, it fell down to $40 million. And then it took off, Jay. Mm-hmm. The stock was at 33, fell to 12 when it went from 100 down to $40 million in assets. And the bottom was basically formed just before, well, I guess Buffett was selling all of his shares in the airlines at the end of May. He said he'd sold everything, and it took off. And so Buffett's scenario was quite wrong. But what I'm trying to share with your listeners, I try to look where there's a trend going on, and there was no other product there. It's a big part of the global travel. And I think the other thing was what's called ancillary fees. So yes. The airlines started coming up with all those different types of fees, which irritate all of us, like change your tickets, $200, another bag is $200, and then credit cards, et cetera. Those fees grew from $20 billion to $100 billion before COVID. Wow. Then they fell down to $40 billion, and they're climbing back up again. So we don't have all the change fees back, but in a year from now, you'll probably see a lot of that fee structure coming into the airline industry. So they have pricing power now. The economy's turned. Everyone follows the TSA daily reports of how many people they cleared. And if it's above the 50-day moving average, it means the airlines are making money. And as people, that's just the sort of concept. I still think we've got a little further to go, but I think that the airlines, the Jets ETF in a year from now has a high probability of climbing back to $33, $34 where it started with a couple years ago. But in that journey of creating that, I noticed that in the worst of times in April 15th, that the number of people cleared by TSA fell from 2.7 million on April the 15th down to 90,000. And wow. The busiest airport in the world was Alaska. And cargo airlines were making a ton of money. Mm-hmm. And then during COVID, all the other airlines started scrambling to get cargo to move masks and gloves and everything else you had to do with fighting COVID. And so the cargo business, what it saw was tremendous pricing power. Mm-hmm. And then there was a policy with the UN on cargo ships. If they have a sort of a higher sulfur content crude oil that comes not from Sweet Texas, but from Venezuela, that those ships are not allowed to go into ports. And that became law, basically started being imposed during COVID. And you have a shortage of ships, mm-hmm. and you have a huge pent-up demand. So what are you seeing now is the shipping industry has the wind hitting its sail, and they have tremendous pricing power. And so I think that the this model is a leading indicator. So if the PMIs are rising, then you can see ships rising. China has still basically been a shutdown except for exporting with robots. But when they turn their economy around, the pricing power from these ships that are out there is going to go through the roof.
Well, what kind of companies are in there then? Are we talking about cargo ships? Are we talking about airline cargo air as well?
We're talking about 70% cargo ships and 30% airlines, cargo airlines. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are Asian names. And you couldn't buy these. You can't go to South Korea and buy some of these names or Taiwan, mm-hmm. these incredible shipping. And their rates have gone up tenfold, Jay. I mean, mm-hmm. they've paid salary bonuses to employees, the working guys on the crew, something like five times their base salary. Wow. That's how much money they've been making. And so what you see is that you can buy for 60 basis points, you can get exposure to these other areas of the world. And with the world starting to go back and sanctions, basically, almost you could think of from global travel dropping, I think that the both cargo and the airlines industry have a lot of upside.
Well, in an email that I received from U.S. Global, it included a chart that showed skyrocketing profits, as you're suggesting here, for the world's largest carriers, starting about June of 2020, the chart that I'm looking at. And it says, it's my understanding, as I'm reading one of your articles here, that the United Nations International Maritime Organization imposed limits on the amount of sulfur that these ships can carry in their fuel to 0.5%, and that's down from the previous limit of 3.5%. And it seems as though that was one of the contributing factors as well. Can you talk about that a little bit? What that means to the ships and how the ship owners are responding to that?
Well, what happens is that it takes a long time to build ships, and the cost of rebuilding a new ship with iron prices going up 70%, it's a game changer. Like, it's going to take a lot longer time to get these new retrofitted carbon, I guess a better carbon footprint sea cargo plane, mm-hmm. not planes, I meant ships. So what I think is it does is it shrinks supply. You know, if all of a sudden we're seeing this in the copper world, and you're an expert on mm-hmm. gold and copper and the metals, et cetera, and every time there's a bleep in Chile with a strike and mm-hmm. supply of copper is not coming on, copper goes up. And then we have this huge infrastructure push out of Europe and then out of America. Well, they need a lot of copper, but the mm-hmm. grade of copper is down. So we're seeing a real supply contraction. And that means as the global demand picks up, that copper prices have much more on the upside. So I think you have to look at if all of a sudden these ships, there's less ships to move cargo around the world, then that gives these cargo ships a lot of pricing power. And that means they're going to be on the upside. And to me, it reminds me of the ancillary fees that the airlines started tacking on in 2015 when we launched jets.
But I think the point here was that, you know, various regulatory requirements, or in the case of COVID and all this, that it shuts down a lot of the supply, and therefore the existing carriers, the existing companies that are in business are making out very, very well. But I just thought it was really interesting, this story about the United Nations International Maritime Organization imposing this reduction in sulfur, as I understand it, in the fuels, and that a lot of the – I think I read that it would cost $2 to $6 million to retrofit, or they can put into expensive scrubbers,
right,
and they can continue to use the higher sulfur, and it was cheaper to do that. I guess the scrubbers take, in theory, at least take the sulfur out of the air, you know, reduce the pollution. But so, as I understand it, most of the shipping companies are opting to put the expensive scrubbers in, and because the cost of the fuel, of this cleaner fuel, was so much greater. Do I have that right?
You have it perfect. It's great, great recapturing of it. So what happens is that these knee-jerk policies for global climate change, you know, from I'm of the opinion that a lot of the policies that have been implemented have been by NGOs and people very sensitive over the environment, and it gets away from engineers implementing. And so what you've seen now out of this whole ESG strategy, that companies had to have this ESG strong footprint, otherwise you shouldn't own them. And mining companies, by the way, as you know, have been doing this for a long time. They just never call it ESG. What's happened in Europe this year is massive energy prices exploding on the upside.
Yep.
Because they shut down all the nuclear reactors in Germany. They made a bunch of emotional. They never planned out this idea of replacing carbon in a very thoughtful process, because it was emotionally driven by a bunch of political people. And I think that some of the UN strategy is the same thing. But this creates opportunity. And now Europe is coming out. The EU wants to change the definition of ESG, that natural gas is okay, and so is nuclear. Because if they don't have natural gas from Russia, they've got a huge problem. And if they don't start up their nuclear reactors again, it's going to be a huge crisis going forward. And I think that these unexpected consequences of bad decisions show up. There are opportunities for investors. And I think that C is one of those, that we're seeing these supply line disruptions around the world. They are even more exposed after COVID and the pent-up demand starts coming back. But wait till China finally stops all their domestic lockdowns and they open up their economy. You're going to see another massive wave of trade and products going all over the world. Now, one of the things we do see is that China has spent much more money on robotics, and there's lots of great, outstanding YouTube videos showing you how they've done with the robotics versus what's happened in California, in Orange County. In that area of the country is still much more manual labor than it is the use of robots to quickly take these containers off these ships and putting them on trains and trucks and move them across America. So that's not going to happen overnight. And so I think we're going to, you know, have to live with part of this supply side inflation.
Right. Which sure would seem so. So what I guess one question I'd have for you is, how long do you think these conditions will persist for the shipping industry?
3 to 5 years. I think they have the wind at their sail for big profits over the next 3 to 5 years. and then they're going to be trying to come up with new ships that are going to have less sulfur. So all those new ships are going to, A, cost a lot more. They're going to have to pass it on in pricing out what they're going to ship. Mm-hmm. They can't do it at a loss. And so you're going to see, I believe, the cost of cars go up. Like, we've seen used cars go up 25%.
Crazy. Yeah.
Right. And so that basically allows tremendous pricing power for new cars coming out and the higher metal prices. Mm-hmm. But here's what's so special about this particular product is it's the only way to play. There's another ETF out there that lets you play the forward cargo cost, but it's a futures type of product. It's a forward mm-hmm. product, but it's 180 basis points. It's much higher. And here you're buying real companies. So it's very hard to go buy Zim Integrated Shipping Services, or if you want to go and buy, which comes out of Israel, mm-hmm. If you want to go to buy Orient Overseas International, which is Chinese, Costco Shipping, which is also Chinese. These are big companies. Nippon is Japan. It's basically cost prohibitive for the retail investor or registered mm-hmm. investment advisor to be able to get exposure for such a low cost. And we're doing it just like we did Jets and GoAU. It's a quant mm-hmm. approach to picking these particular companies. Mm-hmm. And the biggest holding is going to be naturally the Danish. The Mesarec is the biggest holding we have.
Mm-hmm. So these are companies that you can't necessarily buy shares of on the public markets, some of these shipping companies, right?
A lot of them, yes. You cannot buy. It's next to impossible mm-hmm. unless you want to stay up late at night and you have a special account and all this stuff mm-hmm. to buy in Taiwan, to buy in South Korea and China. But the U.S. company would be like Matson mm-hmm. is a U.S. company that almost 4% of the fund is in the U.S., from that one particular holding, but a lot of them are foreign. Mm-hmm. Kuhn+Nagel is Swiss, but a lot of names you've not heard. So I think it's a great way to play the demand for commodities. Mm-hmm. If you're bullish on copper, you're bullish on iron ore, mm-hmm. and you believe that the vaccine has basically protected a lot of people, the world is now going to open up all of its borders. That means there's going to be great demand for jets and for cargo.
Mm-hmm. Frank, I was just doing a little research in preparation for our discussion here, and if I have this right, it seems as though that C is selling below its net asset value. Do I have that right?
It all depends whether its NAV is.
I mean, at
the spread.
At TD, it suggested that it might be quite a bargain if I understand this right.
So
22% discount to net asset value, which means, you know, if you buy C, the intrinsic value or the value of the shares, the assets that C owns is below, is much higher than what you're paying for it. I don't know if I have that right or not.
I never really looked at it, you know,
that way.
I think the ETF is much more efficient. The only thing you might get a discount is because of spread between the bid and the ask. Mm-hmm. And we had those volatile days in launching this. But I think that this is another way. What our research has shown is it highly correlated to PMI. It's a 6-month leading indicator. And now the threat of rising interest rates here and slowing down the economy. Mm-hmm. I can't see the Federal Reserve raising interest rates to 8% to get to a positive rate of return.
Oh, how could they? I mean, they're having trouble at 2% on the 10-year.
So we're going to live with negative interest rates, and if you can borrow for 2% to buy a car, do it, because the metal prices are going to trade higher. And we're in an election year. So I'm not as bearish as a lot of people are talking, because I think this MMT is gone beyond that. They have to maintain it. Otherwise, they create such a liquidity crisis. So I think that once you see China turn the corner, that we're going to live in a new paradigm of what we're seeing today, that the market sells off in anticipation of rates rising, but the rates are never going to rise to the degree that they did in 1980. when Paul Volcker came in and took them 600 basis points above the CPI number to stop inflation. This would just be a huge, especially in a gubernatorial election year. That would be a major disaster. So I'm going to bet be more optimistic about the capital markets. And I think that this particular product is, when it turns, it's going to be ferocious, because some of these cargo ships can double and triple.
So we have to, I guess you're betting on an inflationary world then, one in which you have to find ways to protect yourself. Ships would seem to be one, at least for the next 3 to 5 years. I guess gold. And what about your GOAU? How is that performing?
I love it. ETF. I'm biased. But Jay,
of course you are.
But Jay, it's done what it was going to do, Jay. It's outperformed the GDXJ. Mm-hmm. It's done a great job on a risk analysis. It's less expensive, and it's just, I'm really proud that it's executed the way it would. And here's the big amount of FUD that's out there, is that gold was down last year. You know, in fact, gold was not down. The average price that gold miners received was actually up $50 from the previous year.
Is that right?
But from the opening date of January of 21 to the end of December 21, gold was down 5%. The average price was up $50.
Interesting.
So 60% of the companies are throwing off free cash flow. Mm-hmm. And their free cash flow yields are more attractive than the S&P 500. So gold is like back up the truck. It's just a beautiful asset class with high free cash flow. And we've yet to start to really see, you know, the big mergers to come in. But I think when gold goes through 2200 sometime this year, I think is going to happen. Then you could see gold, the GOAU, put on a spectacular run.
Do you think the major mining companies have done a better job this cycle than in the past? It seems like their balance sheets are cleaner. As you say, they're very profitable, many of them. Have they resisted going out and overpaying for deposits? With about 30 seconds left, what are your comments?
No. I think that the boards of directors are much more frugal and disciplined. Deals have been accretive. I think the gold sector is a beautiful industry with much better leadership. The only thing I would recommend is that they hold their gold. If you have free cash flow, you should bank 10% of your gold because it's too cheap to sell at these prices, is my opinion.
Right. Well, that would make sense. It makes sense to me as a gold bug, that's for sure. Frank, I want to thank you so much. Very interesting stuff you've got going there at US Global. Thank you so much for spending your time with us.
Thank you, Jay. Take care.
All right. You be well. Bye. All right, folks. Well, that is all the time we have for this week. Next week, I'm going to have a former Soviet Union economist who is now a free market Austrian school economics professor at Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin. His name is Yuri Maltsev. He's going to be here to talk about how he sees the U.S. economy right now from his perspective, and he's a bit disturbed about what he's finding, and a lot of signs that point back to the country that he fled from years ago. So it should be very interesting to hear from Yuri Maltsev. Also next week, John Rubino joins me, as does Quentin Henning. Once again, Quentin will be talking about SK Mining next week. That's the company's on to a massive VMS discovery in British Columbia. Very exciting story. So I hope you all be back to listen next week. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.